They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
With a couple of positive housing reports out, the big question in business, should we be encouraged about the housing market?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The number of new homes people started to build was up in November, more than expected. Couple that with news from RealtyTrack that there were 21% fewer foreclosure filings for the month, and you could be thinking the housing market's on the rebound. But permits for future home construction is still weak, and the foreclosure drop mostly reflects paperwork issues. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports.
Federal and state investigations into questionable mortgage lender practices are what reduced a lot of foreclosures around the country, like the robo-signers, those people who signed foreclosure documents without ever actually verifying information. RealtyTrack's Rick Sharga says the only people who benefit from the stall are homeowners facing imminent foreclosure.
From an economic standpoint, this stall is actually bad news, because what it does now is it delays the processing of these properties out into the marketplace where they really need to be pushed and then resold.
Some analysts say RealtyTrack's numbers are sometimes inflated anyway. The company can count one foreclosure multiple times as it goes through different steps in the foreclosure process. In New York, I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
The Federal Reserve meets today looking to limit the amount of fees debit card issuers can charge on those cards. What does that mean for consumers and businesses that accept those debit cards? Jeff Miller is chairman of the National Association of Convenience Stores. He owns a small chain of stores in Virginia, and he's with us this morning from Norfolk. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
How is your business affected by these interchange fees?
We get charged approximately 2% on every transaction that takes place in our stores with a credit card. It's a really outrageous number. On a $50 charge, we pay the credit card companies 87.5 cents, 88 cents. If we were to take a check instead of a debit card, it costs about a dime to process a check.
How did we get here? Where did this come from?
I guess the basic way to say it is that we have about 10 banks that get together to set these interchange rates that they will charge each other. And these rates have been set in a cartel-like fashion for years. And I think what's happened is they've gotten a little greedy.
If these interchange fees are reduced in some way, do you foresee lowering your prices because that fee's been reduced?
Absolutely. Right now, our customers across the board pay about a nickel a gallon on gasoline more than they should, because that nickel goes to the credit card companies.
Why not just not take debit cards?
In our industry now, roughly 65% of our transactions are paid for with plastic in one form or another. If I, as a retailer, said I'm not taking debit cards anymore, there's always a gas station across the street. So as a competitive guy across the street, he's going to say, geez, if they're not taking debit cards over there, I'm going to take them. I'm going to steal all those customers, and I'll make it up on the increased volume.
Jeff Miller, chairman of the National Association of Convenience Stores, joining us from Norfolk. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. European markets are flat at the moment. All the talk of European debt continues to weigh on global stock markets. The Labor Department said today first-time jobless claims were pretty much flat last week. Stocks lost a little ground yesterday. The Dow gave back 19 points to close at 11,457.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Novo Nordisk. Since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. By the Henry Luce Foundation, seeking to increase American understanding of East and Southeast Asia. And by Vanguard, whose mission is to simplify investing and to help people reach their financial goals at vanguard.com/public radio.
Google is letting the ideas flow from its Northern California campus. Engineers there are working on self-steering cars, electric power distribution, and, of course, smartphone applications. But while those initiatives may end up benefiting the planet, it's unclear whether they're going to benefit Google and its shareholders. From Silicon Valley, Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
When it comes to innovation, Google is probably best known for its 20% policy. All engineers at the company get to spend 20% of their time working on their own projects. While the 20% plan generates lots of positive press and keeps many Google engineers happy, Chris Trimble at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth is a critic. First, he says it's incredibly expensive.
Second, this is a policy that spreads those resources thinly and broadly and indiscriminately. And third, that just can't generate projects of any appreciable scale. If it's anything bigger than what a few people can handle in their spare time, it's too big.
And in the past year, there's been some evidence Google's founders and top executives have grown impatient with this approach. Late last year, they launched a lab within Google. Its explicit purpose is to create new technologies that could change the world. Insiders call it Google X. It was this lab that created Google's now famous self-driving car. Judy Estrin is a serial entrepreneur and author of Closing the Innovation Gap. She thinks it's exactly these kinds of big bets on new research and technology that the country needs. She says Google's leaders get that.
Between Eric Schmidt's background, Sergey and Larry's background, they all come from backgrounds where they have a deep understanding of the need for research.
But Estrin says the biggest challenge in corporate research is figuring out how to profit from it.
What do you do with it? How do you monetize it? Do I spin out a company?
After all, it was Bell Labs research that led to the microchip. But today, Intel dominates that business. And while Xerox PARC built the first personal computer, it was Apple and Microsoft that made billions. So now that Google's creating wonders like self-driving cars, its executives need to ensure that the shareholders who paid for this research will actually profit from it. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
And finally, you may have heard the consumer advocacy group, the Center for Science in the Public Interest, has filed a lawsuit against McDonald's, claiming the fast food giant uses deceptive advertising to woo children in. Things like toys in its Happy Meals that drive kids to pester parents to go to Mickey D's, where then they eat high-fat, high-sodium food. Well, what's next to entice the kids? A spokesman that's a clown? Check us out online at marketplace.org. Share your thoughts with us there. Grab the podcast while you're there. And follow me on Twitter, Radio Chio. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
So here are some ideas to improve worker productivity. How about naps at the office or sports television breaks every hour? Sounds crazy, but it works.
What for sure we've seen are the different divisions of the company working together in a way that they never had before.
I'm Kai Rizdal, breaking bad office habits from the top down, next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.